Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, and welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting experts and innovators about what is going on in their industry right now. I'm joined today by Dan Hyde, a UX designer and researcher who has worked to bring some of the most exciting brands to life. As a quick jump into the deep end, can you give us one line that describes who you are and what you do?
Jesus. I mean, that wasn't it.
That's a very succinct version.
Yeah, a bit vainglorious as well. Professionally, I try and work out what people want. That's it. Whether we're doing... just to be clear, like, I'm not a UX designer. I help UX designers. I do the strategy. So I've worked in design, managing, rather than the doing. Yeah. Over the last... Since I learned about UX, like, years ago, I realized, man, that's how you make things work, how you make them work better for people, for your clients usually, but not just. Yeah, I've just been applying it to everything, hence that proposition that everything was user experience and the evolution that we are moving into, that everything is customer experience at the moment. Certainly, that's the way the market seems to be focused. You know what it's like? People like trends, new shiny baubles. And what used to be good design became design thinking, which then, when the internet took over everything, became user experience. And now we're into this more contemporary manifestation, which is customer experience, which isn't untrue. It's just a rebranding of the same thing. Like branded, don't we?
I like that. That's a really great explanation. And sort of expanding on that, what has got you to this point in your career? A little bit about your own backstory.
A circuitous, meandering path has got me here. Like, I started out, I did a film degree and then sold advertising.
Me too. So that's...
Oh, cool. What did you go? Hang on. We're not getting...
University of Cape Town.
Ah, right. I don't know that one. I went as far as Scotland. So yeah. Then through selling advertising, I ended up becoming a publisher. Started a magazine, and then from that ended up doing demolition and landscape gardening, then getting back into publishing. It's a long circuitous route, like I said. Ended up working in magazines down in London, and then eventually sort of negotiated my way out of magazines, because it's a dying industry. As beautiful as they are, like, I think they're magnificent artifacts, and they can tell you an awful lot about culture. Yeah, it's a dying industry. So I migrated from there into contract publishing, and from contract publishing to working in agencies, and then working in agencies, I ended up at an agency that specialized in financial services. So working with the investment industry, so branding, communications primarily. So like every agency, we said we were full service, integrated, I think we said then, before full service. I just meant we'd say yes to everything and then find the people to do it for us. But we got into from branding and communications collateral, moved into websites, beefed up the digital offer. And that was how I got into working with user experience, or applying learning what user experience and UX strategy was as a discipline. And then I found that I was applying what I'd learned, and to some extent already doing it, when I was developing brand strategy, communication strategy, campaign planning.
Amazing.
Because the reason it became so valuable was because we could see where projects that we delivered were falling short of what was intended, or falling short of their potential, even if the client was happy. And where they were really falling short, it was us that looked like mugs, because we hadn't done enough to understand whether the user was capable of using the thing that we'd built for them. You know, they came to us after a website. Then the analogy I tend to use is, like, they'd ask for a Ferrari. So you give them a Ferrari, but they did not have the capabilities to drive a Ferrari. They didn't have the training.
Or well, it wasn't even a Ferrari that they actually wanted at the end of the day.
Oh, I mean, corporate marketing, they want a Volvo at best. What I learned was they wanted to, everyone wants to be sold a Ferrari. And most people can't afford a Volvo. They underestimate the cost or the time and effort it takes. So what we tend to do now is sell them a Ferrari, or at least the user journey to get to becoming a Ferrari owner. Start off small, work your way up, and build up skills through the journey so that they have the in-house capabilities and resources to take what we help them build for themselves. This is it. I hate building websites now. It's painful, particularly the launch stage. So now we just do the strategy. So the agency or consultancy, we're sort of in the middle of positioning ourselves. We help people work out what they need to do next. So they have an idea about what they want, and we help them work out whether their idea is going to get them the things that they need. We help them work out what they need, what they want, and work out how these ideas align with everyone else that they have to work with. So the way we often position it is understand the organizational goal, whether that's the development of a website or just acquiring more customers, and then doing the research to analyze the needs and wants of all the stakeholders in the value chain. So that's people working within the business. What do they need in order to deliver on the goal? Third-party stakeholders, people like us, like just to make sure is the thing that we're aiming for can actually be delivered. Yeah, that's it.
Nice. I like that sort of idea, because I think oftentimes, especially in marketing, especially in brand, we don't really think about the end user. We're sort of like, oh, this is a cool campaign. This is a cool thing to do. And forget that the person at the end of it is not maybe not going to get that sort of clever thing that you've done. Is it going to work? So yeah, I love the sort of idea of focusing on that as a way to ensure that the user is thought of.
Yeah, what we found, Alex, in fact, my co-founder in Everything is User Experience, he posted about it today. He's starting to produce a podcast series of our own. What we've found in particular is loads of businesses are terrified of talking to their customers. They'd rather just guess, blindly throwing darts at a board, hoping to get a bullseye, than just take the time to either speak to their customers directly or speak to the people who speak to their customers directly. If you're too terrified to speak to your customers, speak to your frontline staff. They will give you gold. They will tell you stories for days.
Yeah.
And while they might be partisan, you can, if you are prepared to listen and take the time to understand, you can develop insights based on them. At least create yourself benchmarks. And then if all you really want to do is survey people, you've got some qualitative benchmarks that you can feed into a quantitative research exercise, because your surveys are only good as your questions. And if your questions are poorly founded, 100%. Yeah, what's the point? I mean, you can confirm all your biases, you know, your expectations. Yeah, perfect. Great. But is that really helping you or anyone?
Are you seeing either brands that you are working with, or are there any brands that are doing this really well at the moment, taking the customer journey into consideration? Could be a brand that you work with.
I think I'm trying to think how to frame it without giving too much away, because we've got a couple of projects on the boil, which I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about. So, like, I have one in mind. I have one of mine, Cairnholmes in Ireland. They're switching their housing stock, the mode of delivery of housing, to a method which will benefit the end users of the homes massively, which has created a lot of disruption or perceived disruption in the construction process. It's taken a long and arduous journey to get to a point where they've drawn a line in the sand, they've made their public announcements, they're committed to this approach. Now they've got to a point where they need to really think about how to bring the end users into the process. And I think I'm full of admiration for what they're doing. Like, they're a client of ours, so like I would be inclined to say that. But as an agency, we work with a lot of businesses in the built environment. And we have a sort of sub-branded consultancy, which is specially focused on sustainability and decarbonization for businesses working within the built environment. We have our own podcast called Zero Ambitions Podcast. So if anyone's interested in hearing us talk about this organization, we put out an episode a couple of weeks ago. We're on all the apps, Zero Ambitions Podcast. You will find us with the guy I started the magazine with. But what's particularly interesting with these guys is in trying to sell a difficult seeming proposition. Oh, yeah. You know, the apartments you build for us, because they're a tier one contractor. So they have contractors who do the actual building for them. Well, we're changing it all. Well, actually, we're not changing it all. We're changing it so it's harder to do. And the quality of your work is going to be tested before handover. But the truth is, it's not that hard to do. It's just different. You know, you'd think builders would be building to a high enough standard. So they've been really fascinating. So that point about the value chain, understanding the needs of your whole value chain in order to deliver on the organizational goal. Like, we've been working with them in a sort of strategic comms capacity. What's interesting?
It's okay.
No. Like, this is it. I'm trying to say too many things at once. I'm trying to get to the bit that's the most valuable. Like, the reason why we are so enamored of these guys is because they are really thinking about the experience for all these stakeholders in the value chain. So the first thing we did when we engaged with them was defining some communications and messaging, which we delivered in the form of a presentation with like an authoritative speaker that was UX terms. It was giving them all the information that they needed to understand what was coming next, to reassure them that this wouldn't be too disrupted. It would be delivered from an authoritative source whom they could trust. And it would give them, because we wrote it, it was very much a UX copywriting exercise. We wrote it in a way that it could be delivered as a presentation, left as a leave behind, and it would give them the tools and the vocabulary to communicate to all the stakeholders within their own organizations who would need to be reassured that, all right, we're putting a challenge in front of you, but it's not going to hurt you. Don't worry. We've got you. And the next phase has been doing something similar.
Yeah, it's all the information.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, equipping people, giving them the tools to be able to first understand it and then communicate about it. And then the second phase has been working with them to communicate this to their customers. Because, like, they haven't given their customers, like, approved housing bodies a choice. We're building all these developments. We're changing the way we build. Then we're going to do it better. You don't get a choice. All you get is the value as our consumer. The bit where we are really excited is because the changing from like traditional construction to building to the passive house standard. So the passive house standard is like an energy efficiency standard, like high levels of insulation, high quality windows, airtight envelope, blah, blah, blah. It means you reduce your heating bill. You don't really need a heating system within the home. You just have to pay for heating, for your hot water and, you know, energy in terms of the unregulated energy loads that come from devices and that appliances in a home. It means that you need to think about your home as a system. Like, you can't run it in exactly the same way as you would before, because you might switch to a heat pump as well rather than like a gas boiler, which are commonplace. And we're working with them at the moment to develop the strategy to help people when they move into the home and to help the people who are going to be responsible for managing these properties. Because they may well have been working with a completely different kind of building system. And to help the landlords understand like how this change is going to affect them for the better. Like, you know, finding ways to get the right information to the people who need it before they need it and as they need it. And I think that is magnificent, especially in the built environment where normally you just build a home, knock it out, don't care, move on. You know, a charge we can probably level at the last 30, 40 years rather than forever. Anyway, I digress.
True end-to-end sort of consideration.
Yeah. UX, which is throughout the whole value chain, customer experience thought about for their internal stakeholders as well as their external stakeholders, thinking about everyone as a user. And I think that is the bit that we have found ourselves doing quite differently. Like, a lot of the time when people think about user experience, how can I convert quicker? Should you convert quick? Like, what's the full lifetime value of your customer? Do you want to be rushing them? This is This is the thing. I think I've run out of road on.
I really like that. What are you excited about right now in your particular field?
Not a lot, to be honest. Actually.
This is not an answer I've gotten often.
Well, I think, all right, so the reason I'm saying that is because, like, UX is a proposition, user experience, and what has become customer experience is a proposition that tends to have been dominated by tech companies. So, you know, user experience as a discipline started off in websites and now it's been applied to everything because with, like, the zero interest rates of the last 10, 15 years, like, tech companies came to dominate everything. They are the giants amongst us. And as a consumer of all of their products, have you noticed their experience is getting any better? Because I haven't. Like, whether you're looking at Apple, Google, like, Google search, like, it is a bit too much to say search is dead, but it's certainly a lot poorer than it used to be. Like, the iPhone, I don't see it getting any better. I see it getting bigger and smaller and thinner, and, like, the phone gets better, and there's more lenses or whatever, but I'm less interested in that stuff. Like, the places from which we traditionally found great experience, from where the concept of great experience came, like, and they're diminished, in my opinion. And I'll fight anyone who says otherwise. But I think that's really fascinating. I mean, I do get a bit excited by it because what that suggests to me is people who want to invest a bit more time, effort, and money, man, you can make a big impact. Imagine trying to make your customers happy. Yeah. Imagine listening to them. Imagine the impact you can have. Grow. Like, that shouldn't be a revelation. But, like, poor man, looks like it is. Or it could
be. Yeah.
Again, this is why I'm well excited about the Cairn Homes thing and some of the other projects that we're working on, which are promising something not indissimilar. It's really interesting.
So to kind of, like, build on that, obviously, that sort of, I guess, disconnect between the, you know, what the customer actually wants and what's being given to them. What are the conversations you think people should be having right now in this space?
Who is doing the talking in these conversations? Is it what are clients? What should they be asking of their delivery partners?
I think that the clients, the delivery partners, the people who are in the sort of industry of getting things to people, what are the things they should be thinking about or talking about or taking into consideration?
I think invite candor. Like, the more real you can get people to be with you, the more value they can offer you. If you're talking about, whether you're talking about customers, users, suppliers, your own staff, like, they've got, if you're a manager, all these people have insights that they can offer you that will be measurably valuable. Well, no, you can probably measure it somehow. But they will be massively valuable to you if you're open to receiving them. I think that's the invite criticism without fear. Like, be open to it. Like, one of the things we often say to clients is getting things wrong is part of the process. Like, you can't know what the right thing is. Like, you don't learn an awful lot from your successes. You learn infinitely more from your failures. All my losses be lessons, etc., and other memes. If we open ourselves to these conversations, if we create space for these conversations, like, we can guide them to uncover things that we would never be able to any other way. And specifically, I would advocate for, like, qualitative engagement. So, like, literally conversations, not just, like, observing discourse. Because you can get away with having fewer conversations if they're of a higher quality. That you don't have to do hundreds of conversations if you have, like, 10, 15. So in terms of, like if we're doing website strategy, which we often do, we will say minimum of 3 interviews per user type on a project. So, because we've been doing this for years. So we know that when we've spoken to 3 users of this type, we've probably got the gist of what the themes are, like what the territories we really need to think about are. And By the time we get to 4, we're pretty sure. By the time we get to 10, we are dead sure. And by the time we get to 17, that's the number, then we're finding the outliers of the people who are subverting the system and uncovering value that we could never have considered. Like, they're using the thing day in, day out. They're subverting it. They found ways to extract ideas or information or turn it around into a different thing that if we can give that back to our client, all of a sudden, like, man, we have a whole new utility out of this thing and we don't even have to do anything. We just have to tell people about it. Yeah.
That's something to be excited about as well, I think, as a journey. I really like that idea that invite candor and be open to it and don't be afraid to actually listen and be receptive to that. I think we're all so afraid of failure that we...
Sorry, the adjunct is like, and then you can do your survey once you've done that. Once you've done your hardcore quality up front, then you can do a mass, because you've got a benchmark. All these people that I spoke to, they said this. What do you, the public, think? And so long as you write your survey appropriately, then, and when I say appropriately, you know, don't set it up so you can only get the answers you want.
Yeah.
Oh, and always include a free text field somewhere. Like, if you're all you want to do is surveying, always include this free text field, because survey respondents, if they're really engaged with your product, your system, whatever, they will want to tell you about it and they will tell you. Like, I've found essays in the address field, like, of a survey, where do you live? Like, they've because that was the only free text space, because you can't necessarily predict how long, and we never thought to cap the character limit. Like, they've just, I don't know, written something up in a notepad document and copied and pasted it. And then you get the export spreadsheet at the end of the process, and like, what is this? And, you know, it's not like a green ink screed usually, although, I mean, they have been. It's something someone's really desperate to tell you. And if they think it's really important to tell you this, you can definitely learn something from it, even if it's not the lesson they want to teach you.
That's amazing. I mean, besides the sort of having the free text box and knowing that people are wanting to share this, what are the customer trends that you're kind of seeing now more when you're sort of implementing one of these type of things?
I don't see any hard and fast trends.
No trends, moment. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're working in different spaces. Like, you know, bits of e-commerce with skincare, built environment, retrofit, social housing, membership organizations. Like, we're sort of jumping out about all over the place.
Yeah, different.
So there are no, like, I can't identify a consumer trend. Like, I'm not going to pick this season's cooler. But the trend, like...
You can give it a try.
In these terms, whenever I speak to these people, it is clear that they love telling me stuff. Like, a trend I have learned from doing this for a few years is your customers, your users, they want to give you all sorts of insight that can be massively valuable to you. And the reason why I describe it as a trend is because it is clear that when we engage them, they've never had the opportunity to do this before. Like, they haven't... we're holding interviews. Like, we're taking up like an hour to an hour and a half of someone's time, a busy day. And I'm getting paid to have this conversation by my clients. And the subject of the interview, they thank me for my time at the end. That tells you something. Like, we create a space for them to feel heard, like as a consumer, as a person, as a human, whatever. Like, I'm approaching it very humanly, or like quite cynically, a bit mercenary, because like I'm a gun for hire. I think that's, in fact, that is most, one of the most surprising things I've found throughout this whole process. Yeah, people don't feel
hurt. And that is really, when you think about it, such an important trend for people to take note of, that people want to be heard and people want to actually share. That's like at the crux of everything, that like, when it comes down to it, people just want to tell their story. So that's a really great trend to see companies and brands adopt, be like, okay, we're going to listen for once. So that's quite fascinating and interesting, the idea that the trend is actually towards the brand and the organization, which is just listen.
Yeah, really constructively, structured manner. And it doesn't need to be expensive either. You can do it. It can be world cheap. Sometimes it just takes time. You don't always need four Lycos to come in. But like, I'm not just saying this, but like, it does help to have a third party because you're perceived to be like an independent party, not a vested interest. Yeah.
I mean, it's something that we here at Label Sessions, you know, we're often sort of tasked with doing these types of surveys and customer validations. And it's definitely, we found that the quality and the qualitative methods are a lot more important than just sort of metrics and numbers. So definitely something to think about. Thinking of you as a leader, both in your field and at your organization, what is it that makes you tick? What gets you out of bed every morning?
I like fixing things. Like, not physical things. Like, I'm not doing DIY. Like, I've got a broken gate outside. Like, I'm not willing to touch that. I am, actually, in case my missus is watching. Again, unlikely. Because she... Like, what I really enjoy is talking to people and finding out what's going on. No matter what the thing is. Like, this is why we developed the Everything is User Experience proposition. Because, like, we developed the methodology sort of retrospectively. Like, we reverse engineered it from the things that we were doing that were working well. And what I like is, I mean, I like talking to people. You know, it's nice talking to you today, wasn't it?
Thank you.
But like, trying to understand what's going on, like, everyone's got something that they're trying to deal with, whether it's a problem, a challenge, a complication, or, I mean, they just like talk. Like, there's trying to work out how to improve the thing, just whatever that is, whether it's helping people to understand the value of a new kind of insulation and like work out how to apply it, or whether it's like trying to help someone else work out how they can find customers for their new Ayurvedic adaptogenic skincare range. Like, the method's the same. It's just like, talk to people. Like, so this is what you want to do, and why do you want to do it? And it's a bit, I mean, the genesis of it, I think, is like speaking with me and my grandma, like when I was a child. Like, they were formidable interrogators. They would find out everything that they possibly could. So I was inculcated with a skill set that when I got into sort of agency world, being presented with briefs, like a client brief, not pairs of pants. Like, I naturally just had more questions, often more than the client was used to receiving. But that meant that we were able to, rather than deliver something on the brief that was put in front of us and then be told, oh no, we've had a change of heart. No, we've realized, like, man, we realized before we did any work. Like, it's just so much quicker. It's so much more effective. I hate wasting time. No, sorry. I love wasting time. I hate wasting time on work. Like, I can sit on myself for staring at the wall for hours. But like, if I'm on the 9 to 5, no, it's painful. Sorry.
I think everyone kind of thinks that everyone kind of thinks that you want to speed things up and you want to make things like faster and easier to. But people really, if it's time well spent, people are happy to engage with it. And to, you know, to stand in a queue for half an hour, but it's a really great queue and you're enjoying yourself, is not, you know, a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm thinking of, like, you know, people who stand in lines to get the new comic book release, or, you know, for a concert or something. They aren't thinking they're standing there for 5 hours. They're just like, this is exciting. This is part of the experience. So I'm enjoying it. And everyone was always like, let's speed up the time.
Yeah, straight up. Like, sort of the point about queues, like theme park design. that's hardcore user experience, customer experience in terms of like Walt Disney, man with lots of contemptible opinions, but he had some great ideas. Like thinking about the design of the theme park in terms of managing litter. No, he put the hard yards into understanding the frequency of litter bins that you needed, like the distance between them in order to prevent people discarding their litter on the floor. Back when discarding your litter wasn't too bad a thing, you know, he's taken it to some extremes in terms of, they say no one's ever died in Disney World, which is a really lovely thing to hear until you consider that, like, they're just getting people off the lot to get them into the car park through the underground tunnel network. Sorry, yeah. The point about the queues, they really thought hard about that. If you're making someone queue up for 2 hours, like there's all sorts of points along the way to amuse you, to entertain you, to help build the experience, like educating you about what you're going to see or building the lore. So if it's like a ride based on IP, engage you with that lore, teach you about the subject, or give add a plot point in the queue so the kids can teach their parents about what's going on. Thinking about all of the stakeholders in that particular value chain, about what might be meaningful to them. Yeah. But the same is, like, if we spend more time investing in the upfront strategy with our clients to give them a more entertaining experience, like, we're not wasting time. This isn't a talking shop. We're really getting to the guts of what's important here. I mean, we can have a bit of fun. Usually we have some fun in these sessions. It doesn't have to be deathly dull. And we also speed up the process at the back end. So when we're building a product or delivering a product, there are fewer rounds of changes at the end. There are no changes in direction, because by doing the upfront strategy, by making research-driven, evidence-based decisions through a mix of qual and quant research, you can know you're investing your time and money wisely. But you're not going to make the mistakes when you actually get to the heavy investment, because you made them at the conceptual stage. Like, you tried stuff out. And it didn't work. And you know it didn't work, and you know why it didn't.
Yeah, absolutely love that. I think that's so important. Yeah, the questions in the beginning part makes everything else a lot easier. I'm going to go into my favorite part of these podcasts, which is our quickfire questions. And it's really just, a bunch of really interesting questions that first thing that comes into your mind. So the first one is, could your friends explain what you do?
No, generally not, no.
Yeah.
Well, it depends which bit. Like, if they've only experienced the deliverable part, the activation of the strategy part. Oh, he does websites. Or, oh, he does communications. My missus would just say, oh, he just talks. Which isn't untrue.
No, fair. I mean, I think that's always one of the interesting ones, because I find that generally our friends have no clue what it is that we do. And I think that maybe that's a good thing. What is the best advice that you've ever been given?
Oh, sorry, the best advice is too profane to...
We can ask them to put the bleeps in.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm trying to rethink its conception. Everyone's working for someone. Actually, there is a much more palatable way of putting it. Jeff, the guy I started the magazine with, he became friendly with a guy called John Sherlock, like an old time Hollywood screenwriter, script doctor, rather. He touched up Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid to turn it into the classic that we all know and love today. Jeff, an opportunity to get to know and meet him, sort of became quite friendly in his latter years. When he was told, so Jeff wanted to be a screenwriter at that point. That was his ultimate goal. And what John Sherlock told him was, with reference to writing and understanding how to create a script, was the question you've got to ask yourself is, who wants what? Once you understand that, everything writes itself. And I quote this all the time. In every sector I've ever worked with, like, who wants what? Once you've got the answer to that question, like, everything else makes itself clear. It doesn't matter what I want. What do your customers need? What do your delivery partners need? What do your staff need? What do you need? Once you've got answers to those questions, like the line from A to B, it's abundantly clear.
Price itself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very cool. What can you not live without?
I think I find hardest to live without. I mean, the internet, like the distraction machine.
Fair, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the one. Like,
I don't think I could. I definitely agree. The internet is not something I can live without. It's just, I don't know how anything, I would do anything.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking like cliched things like coffee. Like, no, I've run out of coffee before. I can live perfectly fine. I drank tea instead. fine wine. No, I drank other things. The internet. God, not being able to answer questions immediately. Sorry. Yeah. I'm preventing this from being particularly quick fine.
It's a big one. You know, it connects us to, I certainly couldn't live without it. I wouldn't be talking to you now.
Right.
And then this is my favorite question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I'm right up there. Like, to the point where I'm unwilling to give you a number without greater clarity on how we are judging this guy. Like, are we grading on a curve?
I mean,
or is
it's
the,
just
like, I can present.
I mean, I feel
normal.
Like, I think that pretty much answers the question, right? Like, if you're like, I can present as normal, but I don't want to give a definitive answer. I don't want to be locked into the scale that you're presenting me with.
Well, you haven't given me a scale. Yeah, like, I don't know how to judge myself.
Like 1 to 10, like 1 being not weird at all. I suppose that would be just very boring. And 10 being, you know, just down all the rabbit holes, I suppose. Just all of the.
I mean, I would happily, like, 7 seems like a cop out. You know, it's high, but it's not that high. So I'll give myself an 8.
8. Yeah. I think that's solid. I think we really enjoy weirdness here at Label Sessions. We think it's not only is like quirky and humor and fun part of our values, but like just, yeah, there's so much creativity in it.
For real.
So it's an 8 that we really enjoy. Yeah.
Weird should not be considered an epithet. Like, it is a positive quality.
Definitely not. It is definitely one of our sort of goals. If we can end the day on a weird note, that's how we want to do it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dan. I've learned so much from this conversation, and I think it's been really great, especially since we've done it over the internet. So, you know, we've used one of the things that you can't live without. And it's also been conversation, which is, again, you've shared with us the importance of just having that conversation. So thank you very much for joining me, and I look forward to chatting to you again soon.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.